Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
Good morning, I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News. This hour, why this is the year. This is the year you'll whip your money life into shape. And that doesn't mean punishing budgets or all scrimp and no fun. It means spending and saving with intention. So how do you do that? Financial educator Ruth Hayden is here, and we'd like to hear from you on this. Is there one thing in your money life that you struggle with that prevents you from feeling like you're in control? And what is that? Is it overwhelming student loan debt? Is it credit card interest? Is it just unexpected expenses that you can never quite budget for? So we're looking for the one thing in your money life that you struggle with that prevents you from feeling like you are in control of your budget. Overwhelming student loan debt, credit cards, you name it. And then we're going to talk about clean slate budgeting and how to work in and prepare and work around those things that make you feel like you're out of control. 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828. You can get to me on Twitter at CarrieMPR. Financial educator Ruth Hayden, welcome. Good to have you here, Ruth.
Good to be here.
I want to mention the classes. Do you have some new classes starting?
I have classes starting in February, Couples and Money and Women and Money.
Couples
and
Money.
Still just a few openings.
Money. Okay. Yeah. You can find out more information about the classes at ruthhayden.com.
Yes.
Nice to have you here. I don't want this conversation to sound like you've had your fund and Ruth is here to lower the boom, because I think we can make budgeting accessible without sounding grim. Do you?
Oh, yes. And there are two parts to budgeting. One is the numbers. What are the numbers?
Okay.
You know, what do I have to pay and what does it cost and when do I have to pay it? But the other one is the management piece. And that's the part that everybody thinks about. You know, either I'm really good or I'm really terrible. You know, and I can't do anything. It's just, so I'll cut back my Diet Coke every week.
Right.
Right.
The first thing people think is denial.
Absolutely.
I'm just going to have to get ready to deny myself things.
Absolutely.
Why isn't that true, Ruth?
So when in the class, when we start talking about money planning, they assume that we're going right to, I wish I'd gone to Target yesterday.
Because this is the day it all ends, right? That's not true.
No, it isn't. And I think what's important is that there's so much advice out there about how to make a budget work. Two parts to money. I've got to do this as a teacher. One is the money part, right? The other one is the management part. And management, I believe, is at least 80% of the success with money.
So what do you mean by management then?
Management is, how are you going to make this work?
Okay.
So you can do the numbers. Those are the numbers. Let's get the numbers accurate. Some of the listeners, it's going to take courage to really get accurate numbers
down.
You
mean looking at the real numbers.
Yeah. What are they? What do I spend?
It's going to take courage because money might just slip away. Okay.
They don't want to know. They're afraid. One woman told me, I knew when I looked at it, it was going to be worse.
Right.
And I teach my clients it's safer to know. Let's just know. But that literally is the first 20% of success with money. The management piece is, so how am I going to make this work? The second skill of money is boundary setting and keeping. That's all it is. And so it says, this is how much I will spend on this. Now, how am I going to be able to do that? And that's the part that everybody is individual about. But it has to start with, I'm willing to do that. And, you know, a lot of the conversation I have with clients is, why? What's the payoff for you if you do this?
To be doing that. Okay, got it.
And the payoff has to do both what I call left brain, you know, quantifiable. You know, I will have some savings. I won't keep going into debt. So, you know, the student loans are manageable. The money part. But the emotional part, the unquantifiable, is priceless. It makes a person feel like he is in charge.
Right.
And I get to decide what happens to my money. You have no idea how many times over the years I've heard a client said, well, I thought by this age I would at least have done so they get to have their goals happen.
This is why I wanted to talk about the one thing that in your budget that feels really out of control,
yes.
because it's not impossible to bring that into control, too.
Absolutely.
You need some advice on how to do that. Let me grab some calls here, Ruth, to Lacey in St. Paul. Lacey, what's the thing? What's the one thing that really feels out of control when it comes to your budget?
Yeah, for me, it's student loan debt.
Okay.
I have about $1,000 a month worth of student loan debt, and that's as much as my mortgage.
Aha. Okay, so when you budget around that, what happens? I mean, it throws everything else out of whack or what?
Well, for me, and I've worked on it a lot over the years, but at first my perspective was, there's no getting around this. I'm going to live paycheck to paycheck forever.
Oh.
I just felt so hopeless that
right.
I didn't bother to budget because I didn't think that it would do anything for me or that I would ever really be able to save. And so for me, it was just an attitude thing. Like, this is so overwhelming mm-hmm. that I can't budget. I can't mm-hmm. save. But I had kind of a friend sit me down and I had said, slap me in the face a little bit with reality and say, you've gotten salary raises. You've changed your lifestyle. Like, you can do this. It's about your attitude.
Ah.
Oh, Lacey, okay. That is so important for the listeners to hear, because you went from helpless, hopeless to, I can do something here. Otherwise, everyone has something. And $1,000 student loan payment is something,
yeah.
right? And if you can get around that and say, I still can be in charge of this money and have a life that I choose. Oh, my. That totally changes how you view your life. Lacey, I am so impressed.
So, Lacey, is it still kind of hanging there? You're worried about how to manage it, or do you think you've got this?
No, this conversation happened pretty recently, so I felt really good about it, but then I had a bunch of medical bills coming.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I had this system where I felt really good about the numbers, and then these medical bills came in, and it's like, well, shoot, I'm continuing to kind of have to, every month I think I'm going to be able to put more into savings, and every month it ends up being a little bit less because of these unexpected things.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm definitely still managing the emotions of that and trying to focus on feeling really grateful that I'm able to pay my bills. Instead of being, when I first got out of college and grad school and started paying them off, I struggled emotionally a lot, but mm-hmm. then I started to focus on, I'm so lucky that I had cosigners.
Right.
I'm so lucky that I'm comfortably able every month to pay these bills, and trying to focus on gratitude and doing what you can do to take kind of emotional ownership.
And also remember, you had savings, you put less in savings, but you didn't have to go into debt for the medical bills. So you're not digging the hole any deeper. So good job.
Ruth, she does bring up one thing that I wanted to ask you about, and that's the unexpected kind of mm-hmm. on top of the expected, where the expected even feels kind of onerous. $1,000 of student loan debt and then medical bills. So talk to me a little bit about budgeting for the thing that's kind of hanging there and worrying you, and then the unexpected moment.
I think it's really important to organize the money in such a way that some money goes every month into a savings account. You can call it unexpected expenses. You can call it periodic expenses. You can call it whatever you want. You can call it something's going to happen, I just don't know what and when.
Okay.
If you want a long title. And to put money and figure it out first when you do your budget, how much guessing. The first skill of budget is estimating and predicting. How much do I think I'm going to need for these things, whether it's car insurance, car maintenance, medical, how much am I going to need for these things? And can I put that kind of money away every month? So I add it up, divide it by 12, and it now becomes a bill. I call this an escrow, E-S-C-R-O-W. The definition of it is savings to spend.
What if you feel really tapped out? You know you ought to have, I don't know, $1,500 sitting in your something's going to happen mm-hmm. account, but you feel tapped out, and you just, is it worth it to throw $15
yes.
in it? Yeah. Okay.
Yes. All budgets start with little steps. And where people get discouraged and won't do it is they say,
yes,
what's $15
exactly.
going to do anyway? Forget it. I'm never going to get there.
Right.
Do it. There's something about accumulating, even if you have to take it right back out to pay a copay, right? You will put it right back in again. And eventually it actually does catch up. Actually, you start to get some momentum going. If you get a raise, if you get a tax return, if you get something, rather than spending it, put it in there to build it up, you will be amazed at how much relief you feel and the satisfaction. You know, just a quick aside, there was a study done that said the reason that people spend their tax refunds on things they want is because when they figured out a way to pay for it, it turns into a need. I have to have that. I just have to have that.
I understand.
And what I'm suggesting is anything extra over the basic budget, slip it out and put it into this account so you can go, okay, that's financial stability.
Right. I've got this. If something pops up tomorrow, I've got it.
Yeah.
Ruth Hayden is with us in the studio. If you've just tuned in, we're talking about some clean slate budgeting here for 2018. But I'm asking you for the one thing in your money life that you struggle with that really prevents you from feeling like you're in control. It's the thing that always throws everything else out of whack. What is that one thing? We heard from Lacey that it's student loan debt. Maybe for you, it's that credit card interest that has built up. What is it? Talk to us about it. And then Ruth has some advice about how to budget with that and not feel like your budget's controlling you. You want to feel like you're in charge. 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828. On Twitter at Carrie NPR, to Meg in Minneapolis. Hi, Meg.
Hi.
Hey.
I'm a new mom, and adjusting to paying for daycare has been really hard for us. You know, instead of having, you know, an extra $1,200 to set aside every month or pay extra bills or have for like an emergency fund, you know, we're finding that that has to go to paying for her daycare, and it makes things really tight.
I'll bet. It's a lot of money.
Yeah. I'm fortunate to have a job where I have flexibility, so we're pretty creative with how we're able to schedule to minimize that cost, but that's not going to go away anytime soon.
That's right.
That's the good news, you know, and the bad news.
Right. Okay, so Ruth, budgeting around just this big monthly expense, she has to have it, daycare expenses. But
my son just told me the other day, he said, you know, we're paying for daycare what it would cost to go to the university and stay in a dorm.
Is that really true?
Well, I think a little bit exaggeration, but close.
Wow.
But close.
Okay,
it's expensive to get good daycare. It is expensive, and you want good daycare where people are paying attention.
Ruth?
The same as you do the student loan. You say, this is a commitment we have. At some point, it will go away. So you do budget for right now, and you do a budget for when she's six, and she'll be in school, and the daycare. There'll still be costs. Don't fool yourself. But it won't be this huge chunk every month. So you say, we're going to have a life now. How do we adjust to this? And how will it look different? You entice yourself forward, and you're very careful that you don't take on a lot of short-term debt during these years, because that will hurt those years.
This is great. This is such great advice. So you're saying we sit down and we talk about what 2021 is going to look like in our budget. Mm-hmm. And even though that seems far away, it's not.
No, it isn't. It goes fast.
And this is where then we start to see how once we've managed the daycare, things open up a bit for
they
us
do
financially.
Open up. I had chuckled because a professional I see said to me, I have my paycheck back again. But he had two children at the same time in a very expensive daycare. And now they're in public school system. He said, I'm making money, right? And it was like, and I said,
you always had that, but you didn't feel like you did.
No, because it all went.
Right.
And so if you can, anytime anyone is in a transition period, whether the transition period is a year or 5 years, see if you can pull yourself forward and say, what will money look like 5 years from now? And you will be able to breathe again. And then be really careful during these tight years not to leverage the future with too much additional debt.
I think you have to hear this because I've gotten a snarky tweet from a listener who says, let's tone down the magical thinking about putting away money you don't have. I went from making 50K to 80K, and just like when a team starts winning, my problems went away. So he's saying, deal with it until you get a big raise and you've got extra money, and that's the way to solve this.
When men are tight, the gender studies say, when men don't have enough money, they figure out how to make more money.
Yeah.
When women don't have enough money, they figure out how to make a more minimal lifestyle. Okay. And it's some mixture of the two. Because one of the things I talk to my clients about is how can you make more money to ease this? And sometimes there isn't a good answer. Many times there is. A little stream of income makes a difference in a family. So but making more money, absolutely. I'll tell you something interesting.
But is it magical thinking to think that you can find within a budget places where money might be slipping out that you can recapture?
People do it all the time. They do it all the time, and then they feel good about it. They actually feel better about it than when it happens kind of outside of themselves. Okay, we're going to give you a $30,000 raise, right? By the way, something humorous about that, they call it lifestyle inflation, or the economists call it hedonic adaption, which is when you make more money, all of a sudden you spend more money. That's creating needs out of wants. And so people's for a little while are good, 3 months, 6 months, a year. And then all of a sudden they realize it feels like it felt before they got the raise. So be careful of that, because that slippage really can hurt.
I'm hearing from a number of people on Twitter, Ruth, including Connie, who are talking about health insurance costs and how they've been growing faster than income. And Connie makes a good point here. Not sure how to plan for something that continues to increase with no end in sight. What do you talk to your clients about when it comes to medical expenses and health insurance?
It's very this is the first year. I've been here a long time. And I am a planner. I believe in plans. And I believe in contingency plans. And this year is the first year I have told my clients, just ride with it. You know, I don't know how this is all going to end up. If you have health insurance, even if the coverage isn't great, hang on to what you have and just keep listening and keep watching and keep checking on options. There is no way we can do prediction right now and say this is what we can predict it will cost you in health insurance. We do know that being in a salaried job is still more manageable than being self-employed or having your own company. But even salaried people are dealing with the volatility of costs they never thought they'd have to.
But Ruth, what are you saying about preparing in some ways
savings
within your budget? Okay.
You have to, that's that periodic thing.
Got it.
It's about, we do have money in savings. It might not be enough, but at least it's something. Something in savings makes people feel better. It is absolutely a psychological thing. And how much money you make is not dependent on how much savings you have. People that, you know, every once in a while we hear about the $1 million gift from someone that was a teacher, someone was a cleaning woman. So it doesn't matter, right? You have to be willing to put money in savings. And even people that are making a couple, $300,000 don't always have liquid money. They don't have savings. So some savings will give you some peace of mind and some confidence, even if it doesn't cover everything.
Call from Rosie in St. Paul. Hi, Rosie. Thanks for waiting.
Thank you so much. Good morning.
Morning.
You had asked the question of like what stands in your way from building up that savings. And I had been in the service industry for almost a decade. And so I still have a lot of friends who either have opened restaurants or chefs at restaurants. And it's part of this community. Mm-hmm. And I find that when a new restaurant is opening up or they're putting out a new menu and they're doing something innovative, I feel like I want to participate in that. Or I don't know if it's like a fear of missing out. So then I end up going and dropping like, you know, $200 on, it's a great meal, but it was a one night experience. I felt part of something, but then I'm like, well, there goes, you know,
$200.
$200, you know, for, you know, some like crudo or whatever. But
what she's talking about is actually many times more of a challenge than I have a $1,000 student loan payment month. At least you know it's there. You're working around it. But this emotional, 96% of people say that they spend out of emotion at some point. And this is for good reasons. She's giving very good reasons. And there are several different ways to manage that. You can start a little, it could be in a little Ziploc purse. It can be in a savings account. But it really is a fun escrow. You know, and it doesn't have to be a lot. If she put away, you know, the opening of new restaurants doesn't happen every week.
Yeah.
I don't know how restaurants make money with their, you know, tight profit margin. It's an amazing industry. But anyway, I would start a little decadent choice, emotional, whatever you want to call it, little fund where you put money in, you put loose change in it, you put the dollar bills you have in your wallet, or you budget toward it. I have many clients that budget toward this pot. And those are for the things you choose to do. And then you say, how much money do I have? I will order something off of this magnificent menu within that.
Yeah. Hey, Rosie, are you still there?
Yeah.
I wonder what would happen if you said, if as Ruth is suggesting, you started a little, you know, account or a fund for this, and you were just like, every year I'm going to spend $1,000 on going to restaurant openings, but that's my limit, $1,000. And maybe that gets me to 5 restaurant openings. Would that feel like we were, you know, you weren't having enough fun?
No. And I think it would actually maybe make it more special.
Yes.
Than just sort of that's how.
Good point.
We're entertaining ourselves, or we're just going to go visit this friend, and it just ends up being more expensive. So I really appreciate the advice. And
that was really 2018 astute.
2018 will be the year of restraint.
Rosie, that was intention. Really astute, because when you have money that has an agenda on to play with and have fun with, and then you play within that pot, it is much more fun because there's no negative. It's just like, oh, I did it, and that was fun.
But yeah, and Ruth, when I started the show, I was talking about the spending and the saving with intention.
Yes.
That's exactly what Rosie's talking about. It is. And there's more fulfillment, maybe, from the experience of
it
that.
It just feels like fun.
What do you think about that idea? I think I did a whole show on this a year or so ago about the idea of spending on experience versus spending on stuff.
All the studies say people don't remember stuff.
It's all about the experience, right? Which is
people
what Rosie's doing.
Yeah. Now, the issue is, how do we not hurt ourselves with experiences, too, and feel trapped by that? But every study, and it has been over the last decades, says, listeners who have children, ask them what they got for the holiday a year ago. They're not going to remember. They're not going to remember.
Yeah.
But they will remember if you did something. You know, we just took the grandkids to a water park. They're going to remember that.
Yeah.
So am I, Carrie.
I'll bet.
Okay. But anyway, experiences are the way to go. But what she's talking about is, how do you do the experience route and not have any negative on it? And a little pot. An escrow pot, savings to spend on fun stuff I want to do.
Rebecca says, daycare, like tuition, probably not an exaggeration. College is expensive. Tuition is what keeps me up at night. And to the phones here to Karen in St. Paul. Karen, it sounds like tuition is something that's on your mind too. Yes?
It is, but it's a little, it's 1 degree removed.
Okay.
All 3 of my kids graduated from college in the 2000s and entered a job market where a lot of wages are between, you know, $8 and $12. They're starting to climb up to $12 to $15 an hour. But with student loans, with health care, with daycare costs for them, anytime there's an emergency for one of the kids, it reverberates through our whole family.
Ah.
So we all have had to pitch in at different times. But since none of us are quite directly in control of some of those crises, it's amazing. It's bouncing up all the way to the grandparents. It's amazing how many of us subsidize these low-wage jobs and student loans.
I'm really glad you called, Karen, because I know Ruth has a little experience with the family coming together to help solve financial issues.
Well, there's two things. One is something, and the way she talked about it, it really is remarkable, because to hold the family together and that the family all takes responsibility for each other and that they're a family, you know, the village to raise a child type of thing, that's a wonderful, wonderful thing, because we don't have that all the time in this society. So that's a fabulous thing. The second step, though, is the one we have to pay attention to, is you can't hurt yourself over it. whether it's another sibling, whether it's a parent, whether it's a grandparent, you can't hurt yourself. So the discussion can't be, well, I should pay for that because I do have the money. No, 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 no. You have to think about what that it cannot hurt you. You know, the studies say that parents and grandparents cannot use retirement money for costs that their children and grandchildren have. So you have to protect that. I tell my clients, unless you can get that child or grandchild to sign a contract that says, I will support you in retirement if you spend this on me now. And of course, that's supposed to be humor. Please don't do that.
But Ruth, I think there are, and this sounds like this might be the dynamic in Karen's family, that it seems selfish. We have the money.
Yes.
We're putting it into retirement. But it seems selfish that we're not going to help solve this crisis right now.
But we have to start with a different question. We have a problem. It has to be solved. How we solve it cannot hurt anyone. So when you say we have the money, retirement money has to be off the table because that is something that is going to happen. You're going to be alive. It's going to happen. It's going to happen. So you have to take retirement money off the table. Then you say, okay, how can we do this? And part of it is brainstorming with people on how to make more money. Because if it's, there's always...
Within the family. You
yes.
Mean, yeah, like everybody getting together.
How do we help you make more money?
Right.
Right? Because you're smart and you're well-educated. We need to have you make more money. And a lot of people can't do that on their own. They need to have brainstorming. And that's where the family really
that's
can
great.
Be helpful.
The moral support
yes.
that you get from your family. Ruth Hayden is here in the studio if you've just tuned in. We're talking about, this is not about punishing budgets, but it's about getting your money life under control. And the one thing in your money life that you really struggle with to bring mm-hmm. it under control. Ruth, we got a tweet about Target, you know, going into Target. And I think a lot of us can relate to this. She says, Target spending is out of control. I go to buy necessities and I end up buying useful but unnecessary items. Just what Target wants, right?
Well, now, anybody who works at Target or who makes policy at Target really should hang up at this point. But their marketing strategy is to help you create a need out of a want. That is specific. That is the way the store is set up. And then when you get one of their cards and get a 5% discount in the store, the people who do that spend about 40% more in the store to get a 5% discount.
Is it that much?
It is that much.
Wow.
According to Target's own numbers. So be careful, you know, to take a credit card or their card into Target or Costco or... You know, my daughter shops at Costco and she said, every time you go there, it's something different. And I said, that is their marketing strategy. It is a treasure hunt. I didn't know they had this. So, you know, the stores are doing a good job of taking care of themselves to get you to spend money you weren't planning on. You have to have a management plan, a self-management plan on how you're not going to get seduced by that. So that when you walk out of Target or you have what you said you wanted, but you feel really, really good that you didn't blow your plan.
What is the self-management plan when you're walking through Target? So there's a little bit of fun in it. You've gotten what you need. Mm-hmm. You don't feel punished. How do you manage this?
Well, now we're into the management part on how do I keep the boundary I've set.
Yeah, right.
And my clients come up with all these incredible, there's all kinds of apps that are really good. You know, the most famous one is probably Mint.com.
Right.
You Need a Budget is another one. But no app is going to work for everyone. You have to pick one that you think will work for you if you want to do it digitally, right? Then there are other things. You can have cash with you. You could have a debit card with an account that has only the money you plan to spend on all that kind of stuff. And when you hit the limit, you're done, right?
Call here from Terry in St. Louis Park. Hi, Terry.
Hi.
Hi.
My Achilles heel, or what I have the most weakness, seems to be these home improvement loans that offer interest-free for the first year or 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fine as long as I stay within that period of time that it's interest-free.
Very good.
But, you know, life happens, and sometimes... You end up really paying the piper couple extra $100 a month, because at the time it sounds so enticing to do this. But then when you start doing it, you realize you're still paying, even without interest, you know, several hundred dollars beyond your regular fixed bills, you know, of utilities and everything else.
Right.
And just that's a real hard thing, because, you know, you want to fix up your house and it just sounds real good to not have to pay cash for things. But I have to remember what my grandma said, never a borrower nor a lender be, because she was a depression, you know, mentality. And luckily, I'm pretty good at that, except I do believe when you get older, like I'm in my mid-60s, experiences are more valuable than things, because my grandfathers were both dead when they were younger than me. And I realize these things I have, I'm not going to live that long. Well, I hope to live long, but, you know.
So, yeah, so you want the experiences.
In my 70s.
Terry, let me do this, because we're getting a little far afield here, to come back to the interest-free purchases. Mm-hmm. Ruth, what would you say about that?
Well,
they look pretty enticing.
I'm so glad he called in, because anytime you think you're getting something for free, it actually holds you tighter.
Yeah.
Right?
Ah.
You know, whether it's a good sale, all of a sudden you need it. Whether it is an interest-free loan, whether you can finally get that bed, that couch, that lamp you want, and you don't have to pay interest for 2 years, right? And then people get very excited because they get it, and then they don't get the loan paid off. They don't get it paid off. They don't get the credit card paid
off. So you end
up
with all that interest that was deferred.
And by that time, and usually it's a fairly high interest, the average interest on a rewards card is 16%. That's average.
Ouch.
Okay. So when the interest kicks in, it's a problem. And then by that time, whatever you did, whatever you got, whatever you fixed up is already old. And you've passed it. You don't want to do it anymore. You've passed any kind of pleasure you've passed on. So be really careful. I actually use that word seduced. Be really careful you don't get seduced. In other words, stop thinking. Right? Just react emotionally by something that says it's free, it's on sale. You don't have to make any payment for 2 years, maybe three, right? Really take a breath. You still owe the money. At some point, there will be an interest that kicks in. And even if it's on sale, if you don't have the money, it's not a good thing for you. You'll live without it. I've suggested to clients that they do the three-day rule, Minnesota three-day rule.
You can take it back?
Well, to think about it, not to buy it.
Oh, okay, got it.
Think about it. And then decide if in 3 days, and I say, you know, in 3 days, your brain will come through and say, oh, what are we thinking?
Or, right? Yes, we need it, but we're going to, or we want it, but
we're
going to get
gonna
this
pay
done.
For it. Right. You can't, the people that aren't in credit card debt, ask themselves, how will I pay for this before they actually buy it?
Right. Okay, so our hungry traveler on Twitter wants to know about how you manage dating expenses. Can you talk about how expensive dating is? It's expensive being single and trying not to be. How do you budget for that?
That's a great line.
It is.
Right? Well, again, you budget it. You know, we talk about what you want in an experience out of choice. This has to be a budgeted pot. You know, it can be in cash. You will be very impressive to whomever you're on a date with if you lay down a $50 bill or a $100 bill. So you actually can collect this money in cash and look impressive, right?
Yeah.
Cash is actually more impressive than
a credit
card.
Do you want to start a relationship always whipping out the $50 or $100 bills?
I think that when
you,
dating
you know what I'm
today
asking.
Is different
yeah.
than dating was in my day, because a lot of times in dates you split the costs and maybe you talk about that.
You mean now or then?
Now.
Now, right.
Where you talk about, you know, who can we split the cost until we just get to know each other, especially for internet type dates when we're just meeting each other. But have a pot for this and decide what you're going to do. And don't choose a restaurant that is exorbitant.
Just to impress.
Yeah, go out for coffee, go out for tea, go out for lunch.
You're making this sound so exciting, Ruth.
Well, the thing is, until you know if this person really might be someone special in your life, don't spend a lot of money.
I think we need a show on dating apps. Not with you, Ruth, but with...
No, that would not be mine.
Right? I think that'd be fun.
There are lots of them right now.
Hungry travelers, stay tuned. We're going to do a show on dating apps. Okay. Anne says, my hint for shopping at Target, don't take a cart. Oh, you can only buy what you can balance in your arms. I've used this trick since college. It really helps to curb those impulse buys. That is smart.
But every person has to come up with where she says or he says, I think this could work for me.
Yeah,
I think this is what we'll do. Good job.
I missed Kathy. Darn it all. She had to hang up. But this is good. She says, my problem is my car. I always want a new car. I can't afford one, but I'm always out looking. I want to figure out how to be happy with what I drive, fix it, and move on. But I love cars. So she not only likes, it sounds like, the thing of the car, she likes the experience of the car.
Yes.
And that becomes more of a, I need this and I want this. How does she manage it, Ruth?
Well, one of the questions is, can she go look at cars and try them out without needing it?
Yeah.
And just have the fun of it and say, oh, this is interesting. You know, and the other thing is there's a satisfaction. Consumer Reports says do not sell your car until either it's too dangerous to drive or it's in the shop more than it will get you to work.
Is that really the rule?
Yeah, those are their
from
rules.
Consumer Reports, right. Wow.
Now,
geez, I haven't lived by that either.
Well, you can modify that in any way you want because they say it's a depreciating asset and you're never going to make money on a car. So, you know, wait to do it. Now, she has a love for cars, so we have to figure out how she can have fun with what comes out new every year without needing it and without feeling bad about what she's driving.
To the phones to Steve in Edina. Hi, Steve.
Good morning.
Hi.
So for me, you know, one of the kind of challenges is family gifts, which, you know, I don't think it's overburdening, but it seems like there's always more there than what we had sort of planned on. So this time of year, but also around birthdays, all of a sudden those credit card bills, which we always pay off in the entirety, we never carry a balance. But in terms of the question, it just seems like something that kind of creeps up on you. And all of a sudden you kind of go, wow, I didn't think it was going to total up to that much.
No, this is a really good point because at the end of the year, you're like, we spent, my gosh, right? $850 on family gifts. What do you do, Ruth?
You have to be willing to say, we can figure out a way to give a gift to this child or to parents or to wife or husband. We can, without hurting financially, and you set a limit and then you work toward that limit. And you really would say, okay, so if I got this, would that be enough? So you set a limit. We set a limit with our children and grandchildren, not to them, but in our heads.
Yeah.
We say, this is what we're going, and we stay with that. And then at the end of Christmas, which is what we celebrate, we don't worry about the bills. But it's really important to have a number in mind and not get all emotionally, oh, she would just love it. We should get that. I know it costs three times more than we thought, but we should get it. You can't do that. That's what I call seduction. Seduction is your brain just left and you're feeling you're not counting. You have to do both with money.
Okay, couples and budgeting, because you do these classes.
Yes.
And we've got a couple different questions about this. Years ago, this is from Twitter. Years ago, husband actually refused to follow a budget. The male make more versus female scale back and save has been a struggle, but he also says he's fine with me hiding money. Weird, but sort of working. And then let me add Ashley onto here. She says, husband and I have different views on saving for the future. He has a business and is investing his savings into business and hopes we can sell it and make money in the future. I'm putting my income into the standard 401k. Which one is wiser? Delve into the complexity of couples and money here, Ruth.
Well, first, Kara, we've talked about this subject. You know, this is the number one issue for couples.
Right.
It's what creates the frustration, the anger, the fights, the estrangement, and the divorce. They just finally just say, I don't want to do it. I just don't want to do it. Couples have to get to the place, I'm very biased about this, they have to get to the place where they want the relationship to be healthier over their way of doing money. And there has to be that motivation. You know, that's in the couples class, I work very hard on that to get them to the place where they say, yep, We'd rather have a really healthy relationship. Now let's figure out where the middle ground between us.
And it's not easy. I've been married 30 years. We're still dealing with this. So it I don't want anybody to think this is easy.
I think it's worth it.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's worth it, but it's going to take time and a little bit of energy and effort to say, let's figure out a different way here.
Right.
Because this isn't working and this isn't going to take us to the place we want to get as far as a healthy relationship. And there becomes a piece of almost stubbornness which says we're not going to let money screw this up. We're not going to let money hurt our relationship. So we're going to figure out money. That's more important.
I thought you might mention your money meetings. Because this mm-hmm. is something I've done. I know you recommend it for mm-hmm. a number of couples.
Yep.
Explain again what it is.
It's where you meet together to learn. You make decisions as a couple. So it's the only place where it's probably fully democratic in your family. You both have equal decision-making power and opinions. And then you make decisions. There's two parts to money. One is bookkeeping. Have we paid our bills? What do we still owe on that credit card? And then there's the accounting part, which says, so what does this mean and where are we going and are we close to our goals?
And that's kind of the fun part.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. But the numbers, you got to work through the numbers together
right.
too.
But to meet and not meet just when we're having a fight and then it turns into a marathon. I like little sprints around the block, you know, which is like weekly.
So it's like once a week.
Yeah, so they can practice.
On a Thursday night, it's an hour.
They can practice and no more than an hour. You set a timer.
Lisa says, going out to eat and paying a babysitter, even if we eat somewhere cheaper at happy hour, it's a $100 night. Whoa.
It's true.
Yeah. It's expensive. End of the phones to Pam in Minneapolis. Hi, Pam.
Hi.
Hey.
My question is, how do you budget or plan for charities? Mm. Because I have been giving, I tithe to my church, and then I give to charities beyond that. And I have a chronic illness, and so I don't have really I don't feel well enough to go out and do things all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I tend to give my money to charities. And I get volumes of mail every day from charities wanting money. And I just don't know how to say no.
Okay. So this is a really good question. I love it when Ruth talks about putting value on your charitable contributions. Mm-hmm. So, Ruth, what will you say about that?
Well, one of the things I do believe is that you are first your own charity. You first have to make sure that your life is in order and that you are safe and secure. And that means money for retirement so that you don't become a problem. Once that's done, then you say, we need to reach out and we need to help other people because there are always people that have less than we do. I think it's important to teach children about this giving piece, and it's important for adults. Adults really feel rich when they can give and it doesn't hurt them and it feels really good. And then you get very clear. Don't let mail or calls tell you who to give to. You get very, very clear about what impact do we want in the world out there and who do we want to give money to. Don and I do this, and it's a list we go over and over on who we give money to.
And it's not rigid. I'm sure some things move around on the list.
Yes.
But you're very clear between you about these are our priorities.
So when somebody calls or someone, it's just if they're not on our list and we're not, it doesn't look, we just say we've already decided who to give money to this year.
Andrew says, on zero interest loans, because we were talking about that a few minutes ago, try asking about getting a cash discount on these offers. You might be surprised. Is it really zero interest then? What's mm-hmm. he saying?
I don't know what he's saying, except I think what he's also assuming you can get a discount off the thing itself.
Okay.
Is that you can get a cash discount if you don't go into the loan and instead you paid cash.
Okay.
There are dentists that do that. There's furniture stores that do that, where if I give you money in cash, I want a discount.
Okay. Right. So
there are people that do that.
Here's Deb. This is interesting. She says, I found a solution to recreational spending and acquiring. I've transferred all the energy I had for that to playing Pokemon Go instead. It's practically free. I get a lot of exercise. I meet new people and I visit interesting places. You know, I used to see a lot of people doing Pokemon Go, and then it kind of, maybe because it's 80 below out there, I'm not seeing quite as many.
Tripping over their feet as they're watching. I just love it.
I think I can grab a call here from Kevin in St. Paul. Hi, Kevin.
Hey there, how you doing?
Doing good. What are you thinking about?
Well, probably a little off topic, but your kind of ongoing theme of stop accumulating stuff and you know, more about experiences. A lot of family members are getting well into retirement age, and it's becoming very apparent that they've acquired a lot of stuff and continue to acquire stuff with the idea that their kids will want their stuff. And it's very common that by kids, I mean, I'm 50, and, you know, but and not only do, in general, we've already got our own stuff, so we really don't want our parents' stuff.
Yeah.
When they downsize, it actually puts quite a burden on us to figure out how to help them get rid of their stuff.
What do you say to your parents when they give you the, but you'll have this. We have it now, and then you'll have it someday.
Maybe he says what my kids say to me. We don't want that stuff, Mom.
Right.
Those are statistics, what he's talking about.
Right.
Antique stores are having trouble because people don't want the old stuff anymore. They already have their own stuff. I have a good friend who says we'll probably never use the front entryway of our house again because it has all the mother-in-law stuff in it.
I think this is a good point about talking to your parents about retirement. We've actually done shows on this, Ruth, but the sensitivity of as a child of a parent who's retired or retiring, wanting to be, is everybody okay here, right? Wanting to be confident that your parents are well prepared for this. But I think it's sensitive to bring it up.
I think it's really important to bring it up. We should do a show sometime on how to talk about that and how to talk about retirement in general. But then how do we do this with adult children and parents? How do they have a conversation? I have clients that are trying to do this conversation with the parents, and they don't want to hurt anybody's feelings, and the parents are still fairly protective. And to his point, they think their stuff is valuable. And so to have this conversation where we can really honestly talk about money. There's also another little factor in here, which is the accumulation of stuff in many ways has the same effect on someone's life as debt. So too much stuff also encumbers you. It gets very complicated, both psychologically and financially.
Ruth, this has been fun. Thanks much.
Good
to start
pleasure.
Out 2018 with a lot of good advice. If you just got in on the, I don't know, the middle of the show or the end of the show with Ruth Hayden, you can find it on the podcast. Here's what else is on the podcast. The show yesterday with Anatoly Lieberman, and I'm still hearing from you on the faddish words of 2017, faddish words and phrases that got into our heads, drove us crazy, that we ended up using, right there on the podcast for you to listen to. NPR News with Carrie Miller.